B-Pod Studios.
Belger.
I'm a liar and a phony. One of those no-good nicks you keep running away from.
Maz.
I'm a man, Mel. Nobody's perfect.
Belger and Maz. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It's hour number two, getting your game ready. Patriots-Giants tonight here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. The pregame starts at 5:30 with Beadle and Gasper. We got you covered right up until then. The Giants, unfortunately, they lose last week. I'm saying unfortunately, for those of us rooting for a competitive product or a more compelling matchup, it's too bad they lost last week. It's too bad they're without their top two running backs, top receiver, and top tight end. Too bad. If they had won last week and they're 3-0 under the rookie quarterback and they come in fully loaded, then we got something to talk about, that we have a little fun, because maybe the New Yorkers get a little ahead of themselves. They think they actually have a chance, and we got something to talk about in terms of the outcome. Turns out we don't have anything to talk about in terms of the outcome. That is a foregone conclusion. So we talk about all these other little facets of the team and items on the team as if we would a preseason game. But let me ask you in general, do you like what New York's got going on down there?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I think that offensively, especially, they got a lot of work to do on D. But in terms of what they're building now that they have Jones.
Do you think they're on the right track?
Yeah, I do.
Well, they are, because they got it right with a quarterback. And that pick was universally scorned by people like me. And I think most, I mean, those that even cover the league and certainly know it a hell of a lot better than me or you or any of us, they look at this like, this is a reach. This kid out of Duke? What were you, what, because he looks like a quarterback? Daniel Jones is going to suck. Well, it looks like we're all eating crow because it looks like the kid can play.
So, obviously, a huge pick if they nailed it. Huge pick.
But I'm with Maz, but even in that preseason game that the Patriots played against him, when he finally came in, I was like, oh, crap, this kid looks all right. Like, he throws a decent enough deep ball. He's got a motor on him. You know, he can break free and make plays with his legs. Like, I don't know. It looks like, and since he's come in, before it was Eli Manning and it was the boring Giants, and you could, you know, it just looked as predictable as the day was long, like most Giants football for the last handful of years. He came in, he's added a spark.
I mean, to me, there's no question. Like, again, you could see it right away. The thing that I like as much as anything is the accuracy. He wasn't throwing the ball down the field and deep and, you know, reckless or careless with it. He wasn't looking to show off his arm. He was looking to put the ball in the right spot. That's what he was looking to do.
Okay, so if they got the quarterback right, they, you know, that's half the battle. No question about it. I go back to their draft last year. When they draft Saquon Barkley, second overall. And here's where I think their problem is and is going to be, is that they drafted that player at that spot. Let me ask you this. If last year, instead of drafting Saquon Barkley, they drafted... Well, it could be Sam Darnold, the quarterback then, and then he went defense this year. But let's just say there were a bunch of good defensive players that went off the board in the top 10 of that draft. Bradley Chubb, the pass rusher there in Denver, went 5 overall. Roquan Smith, the great linebacker there in Chicago.
Oh, I love him.
He went 8 overall.
Yeah, but there's something going on with him off the field, but go ahead.
Yeah, no, there's, right, but yeah. but I mean, just work with me. What if Denzel Ward, that good corner in Cleveland.
Okay, excellent, yeah. Good player.
Went 4 overall. So all those guys went, okay, Denzel Ward, Bradley Chubb, Roquan Smith. Okay, all those guys went in the top 10. What if the Giants drafted that defensive stud there last year, got their running back later on in the draft? Nick Chubb went in the, was this the second round? You know, and again, running backs can come from anywhere. As we all know. But if they just waited on the running back and got it from the pack like most teams do and should, and they drafted defense there, and they still went Daniel Jones this year, wouldn't they be so far ahead of the game?
They'd be better off, yeah.
Let me give you another...
But again, but, you know...
You'd be building a more complete team because, you know, you've already addressed a big need defensively, either with a pass rusher or a cornerback.
I think the Saquon Barkley pick set him back, is what I think. And it will set them back further when they have to pay him on the second contract. And he fizzles out like they all do. Like they age like bad milk, as Murray once said. And you're seeing it now with the Rams and
Todd Gurley.
What's his face? He's cashed.
Oh, yeah, he's done.
Like, it's already over.
Yeah.
By the time you get to your second contract, I mean, I don't know. I watched that full Packers game on Sunday. Ezekiel Elliott doesn't look quite the same to me either. By the time you get to that second contract, the running back's generally cashed. It's over. Yet you have to, when you draft him top five, you feel compelled to give him that second contract. You don't want to be 3 years and out with a top five pick. You got to justify that draft position. So you make him a franchise running back, and you dig deep, and you pay him a ton of money, and you build your offense around him, and then by the time he gets to his fourth year, he's toast, because that's the nature of that position. But I think the Giants would be so far ahead of the game if they went defense in the top 10 last year. Denzel Ward, Bradley Chubb, or Roquan Smith, and then drafted their quarterback this year, and then got their running back deeper in the draft. And or here's another one. I mean, six overall was Quentin Nelson, that insane lineman from Indianapolis. Right?
Hey, Quentin, what's up, man?
What's up, Jim?
How's it going?
Hey, you fired up?
Okay, this guy, this guard in Indy, that's Jim Irsay, obviously. It's goofy to get two like
over. How's it going?
I don't think it is with this. That kid's awesome.
So I mean, so what did Indy do? Indy drafted linemen. This Mack was when was he drafted? Second, third round. He was a later
Marlon Mack. Yeah.
You know, he's a later consideration, and they went that route. And so, okay, yeah, Marlon Mack was the year before a fourth round pick.
I was going to say he was later. Yeah, he was in the middle of the draft.
Okay, and he was the year before, but. If you draft Quentin Nelson in the first round and Marlon Mack in the fourth round, you get two players out as opposed to Saquon Barkley in the first round, and now you have no offensive line, you have no defense.
Well, they weren't thinking for the future. This is where they screwed this up. They thought that Saquon was going to be the piece that they add to the offense and would help Eli Manning and take some of the pressure off of him, and they would be a playoff contender, and they completely whiffed on that.
So I half agree with you and half don't, and here's why. Because your question initially was, do I like what they have going on down there? And my answer is, yeah, I do. Would they have been better off going, you know, a defensive?
Yes.
So I think the answer to both questions can be yes.
Yes, I hear you.
Because I just think with Barkley, as much as, because the point you make about the contract is to me the biggest part of the whole thing. They're going to end up way overpaying this guy.
And you have to when you draft someone two overall and he's good. You have to.
So, no question. I mean, it's going to compromise them financially. It absolutely will. I also think he's really good. Really good. And now, that doesn't mean he's going to be good for 6 years. I just mean that right now, he's better than just about anybody in the league.
But I just think I'd rather draft Quentin Nelson and try and hit the running back in the third and fourth round, second, third, fourth round, and get two players out of the deal than do what they did.
How's it going?
Hi, Quentin.
Hey, Quentin.
Hey, you fired up?
It's really just an excuse to play the sound, isn't it?
I mean, if you're not fired up, I got a bag of tricks on me.
Hey, Quentin, what's up, man?
How's it going?
Could you ever envision Robert Kraft doing that on a teleconference? Hey, Quentin.
But I'll tell you
How's
what. That top 10 of that draft in 2018.
Good draft.
Yeah.
There's some iron in there.
Good draft.
And again, I'm not telling you everyone's perfect or that they're, you know, but Baker Mayfield 1, Saquon Barkley 2, Sam Darnold 3, Denzel Ward already made a Pro Bowl 4, Bradley Chubb 5, stud. Quentin Nelson, one of the best.
Hey, you fired up.
Quentin Nelson, one of the best offensive linemen already in the league at
How's
6.
Going?
Josh Allen, unfortunately, at 7. Roquan Smith at 8. McGlinchey, is he?
He's
huge in San Francisco,
right tackle. He's playing well.
Number 9, and Josh Rosen, unfortunately, 10. So Josh Allen, Josh Rosen. I'll say this about the Giants. They may have missed on Darnold, but if they got it back on Daniel Jones, then okay, fine. At least they didn't bite on Josh Allen or Josh Rosen. Like, give that to them. They didn't go in on the wrong quarterback. And instead, they went running back. Which I still think is a big mistake up there.
To me, the best guy they could have taken of all the names you rattled off is the corner in Cleveland, Ward. Because, look, we all know that position can change your defense.
Micah Fitzpatrick was 11 that year. That was a good draft.
Excellent draft. Excellent.
I mean, already, there's Derwin James, a safety with the Chargers.
Another good one.
And Vander Esch, that linebacker in Dallas,
nasty,
who's a freaking stud, was 19. That's five guys who are already in the Pro Bowl, second year. So they made him as rookies. I guess. I mean, that is a that's a hell of a draft.
That's a great draft. It is. It was a terrific draft.
And I'll tell you, last year, people bitched about Daniel Jones, and now it's super early. And I don't really know what a lot of these players are, but you look at the top of that draft and you say, I don't know. You know, Kyler Murray at one overall is already, you know, got a long way to go. Bosa looks like a stud, number two in San Francisco.
Yeah, he does look good.
The is it Quinnen Williams, the defensive tackle the Jets took?
It hasn't been great so far.
Does he do anything? I don't even know. Clelin Ferrell, the defensive end in Oakland? I don't know.
A reach, but go ahead.
Devin White, inside linebacker for Tampa. The player drafted after Daniel Jones was Josh Allen. He's a linebacker in Jacksonville.
Pretty good.
TJ Hochstein, the...
Tremendous.
Or Hockenson, the...
Yeah, he's been really good.
The tight end in Detroit, he's been really good. Ed Oliver, defensive tackle, went to Buffalo 9. Devin Bush, linebacker, Pittsburgh, good player, 10th overall. But I don't know. It feels like that... You know, what did the Giants really pass on by taking a... If they reached on Daniel Jones, what did they really pass on? Doesn't feel like much.
No, it was only a reach because the kid played at Duke. It wasn't much known. It's just like he had a good coaching pedigree because the coach at Duke worked with Eli Manning, worked with Peyton Manning back in the day. He was 6'5" and had the look of a quarterback, but he didn't put up ridiculous numbers or anything like that. So everyone mocked it. It's like, okay. And he, I don't know, the kid just... looked like a bit of a stiff, too, both on and off the field. So it was like, well, this is such a reach. And most prognosticators had Daniel Jones maybe going late first round, second round. So 6 overall, you know, everyone mocked it, and it turns out they got it right.
So are they on the right track? If they have the quarterback, they are.
Yeah, I mean, that's more than half of it, really.
And if they were leery of a Josh Allen or a Josh Rosen, but they like Daniel Jones, big ups for you. Great job. Nailed it. The Saquon Barkley pick's going to hurt him. It's going to hurt him.
In the long run, I don't think that that's wrong.
All right, so that's my thought. What are yours to your calls right after this?
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hey, it's
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task. But after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Felger and Mass.
I love it.
You were right, Mass.
I just keep loving it more and more.
Bore my listeners to death.
I finally feel alive.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sounds good.
When you look at Daniel Jones, since he stepped in, is he working with the entire offense there, or they kind of brought him along and opened up just a chapter here or there?
I'd say he runs the offense. I mean, you have to ask them that on the specifics, but they do what they... Again, they have a West Coast-based offense with some, you know, certainly an emphasis on the running game and play-action passes as well as some RPOs and things like that. So those are all part of what he does. It would be the same game plan if Eli was in there. I don't know. You'd have to ask them that, but I don't see them holding back anything. And he's very athletic. He's mobile. I wouldn't say he's, you know, just go back and start running, but if he needs to run, if the protection breaks down or if there's an opening there, he gets outside the pocket, he can cause a lot of damage with his speed and his ability to extend plays. But he's a very accurate quarterback and has good poise. He's shown good toughness in the pocket. He's been hit a few times, but he just stands in there and, you know, can keep ripping it. So he's been impressive.
Right, it's Bill on Daniel Jones, who you will see tonight. And here tonight on 98.5 The Sports Hub, we got the game. Felger and Maz up until the pregame at 5:30. We continue with your thoughts. Freddie in Brockton. Go ahead, Freddie.
What's going on, man?
What do you got?
So I called in earlier. We were talking about Brady's attitude, you know. And listen, I'm a big Brady guy. I'm like you, Murray. I'm Team Brady anything. But he's really just acting real spoiled right now and kind of like a brat. You know, I was saying it's kind of like, you know, a kid, he's going on a real hot date and he needs to use a car from his parents. So his mother gives him the keys to the Lamborghini. And as he's driving out the driveway, the father stops and says, "Oh, no, son, you got to take the BMW." And he's just pissed off because it's the hottest date of his life. He could have had the Lambo.
Freddie.
But, you know, I'm listening.
Yeah, no, I get the analogy. He doesn't like.
He wanted the better car.
Go ahead.
And a pack of rubbers.
Go ahead.
Who called? Who was that? Colin Coward? Giving us that analogy? Seriously. Yeah, he could have had the Lambo with a little sweet surprise in the glove box, and instead he got the S-box.
He's obviously not pleased with what he's surrounded by, or he's not pleased about how he's been treated by the team, or he's not, you know, there's a little accumulation of things here, obviously. The thing that I just push back against is that he's got an excellent team that is the odds-on favorite to win the Super Bowl, that will be favored in every game that he plays. So if it's all about team, meaning offense, defense, special teams, team, he's in an excellent spot, an outstanding position to succeed. If it's just about the team, if it's about him individually and his stats, he's in a little less of a spot. And if he's reacting to that, that's disappointing because that's not the guy that I know. So that's it in a nutshell.
I mean, again, it's a little, you know, it's diva-ish, and it's out of character for him. I'm not telling you that that's consistent with what he's been over the course of his career, because he hasn't. That practice comment, the more that you think about it, holy crap, not to mention throwing the tight ends under the bus. Like, that is wildly, like, there's something going on with him, because he's not acting like he usually acts.
Matt in Braintree, what are your thoughts?
All right, please don't cut me off. I have a two-part question. The first one is, Tyler Eifert and A.J. Green, could you fit both of those guys in if somehow they traded for them? I don't think they will. But the second part of the question is, will they, because Tony and Mike, you both actually were on teams and, like, follow them. Will Bill Belichick make a second call, like, about Trent Williams? Or do GMs usually just make one call and that's the end of it? Like, would Bill, like, make multiple calls?
No, he'll tell him that. You change your mind, call me first.
Absolutely. And even then, you know, 6 weeks later, he might call again and say, hey, just checking in.
Of course.
Yeah. So that's not a one-shot deal.
What the hell are the Redskins doing? Lost season, they're tanking, and they have an asset where they could get a high draft pick for, and they're just sitting on it. Because what?
They're spitefully leaving their player in purgatory.
Exactly.
See, but again,
that's how they do business there.
Right, which is poorly run.
Yeah.
Right? Poorly run. It's just because you're hurting yourself more than you're hurting the player.
Eifert and A.J. Green. You want him?
I want Eifert. A.J. Green doesn't interest me. I told you I want more of a possession receiver, and I feel like A.J. Green is that home run hitter. So, fine. You know, how many times really are you going to whip it down the field and he's going to catch a long touchdown that's going to serve you in a big spot?
I hate it.
I'd take Eifert.
Me too. Eifert, I like the idea because I think it's low cost, both in terms of what you have to give up and what you're going to pay him. And there's a potential return there. There's a need. When I say return, because if he's healthy, he's a good player.
We've got Tony in Stoneham. Hi, Tony.
How you doing?
Good, man.
Listen, you guys, I know why you're all over Brady. Brady is the most unselfish guy probably in sports. He isn't fighting for any contract. I could try to make him out to be. What he's telling you guys is the honesty. He needs some help with the offense. You're not going to run in. You're not going to. You know, you can very easily have some lost games with the offense that they have. You saw it in the Buffalo game. If they don't block the punt, they lose the game.
Yeah, they would have found another way to win that game, Tony. They
another
weren't,
way to win.
Yeah, they weren't losing that game.
I'm glad you have that confidence in him, but you know, he's not throwing anybody under the bus. He's just being honest with you. Felga, look, you bashed him for not going to an optional practice. He won the Super Bowl that year.
I know, that's killed my argument. It sucked, but I'm back on the horse, Tony. He should go to those offseason practices. I don't care what it ends up being. It's just bad form. When the quarterback doesn't show up, I hate that. I never liked it when Favre did it. I don't like it when Brady does it. I don't care what the result is. He should be there in the spring. He'd be farther along with these guys than he is if he showed up in the offseason.
I mean, I would tell you that the 2 years he's missed the spring, the passing game has suffered a little. Has their passing game been the last 2 years been what it usually is?
And again, he's complaining about, you know, the trust with these players and these young players and these, you know, young players in this offense and inexperienced guys in this offense and building a trust. If you started in April, maybe the trust would be better by the time you get to October. But he doesn't want to show up in the offseason, so I'm sorry. I'm not coming off that. And I agree that, generally speaking, Tony, he is a very unselfish player, one of the most we've ever seen, which is why this is kind of out of character, which is why it sort of stands out, and it's so noticeable to me and unlike him.
I mean, that's the story.
And he is throwing his teammates under the bus. When he's asked about building a rapport and building a trust with his young tight ends, and his answer is, well, I just play with the people that they give me. That's not throwing him under the bus.
See, that's the part that a guy like him misses is you sit there and you say, well, he's the most unselfish player in sports. Like, okay, first of all, I would say superstar. There were lots of guys in sports who were unselfish.
Yeah, right, unselfish superstar.
Yeah, that play unheralded roles. I mean, James Devlin feels to me like a pretty unselfish guy. Okay, so that aside. But the real thing is what he's acting like now is a departure from who he's been. It's a departure from who he's been. So what's going on between those ears? What's going on?
Why
now? There's something going on in there.
Why now? Dan and Quincy, you have a minute.
Okay. I wanted to get on that balance, the offense versus defense thing, but this is not out of character for Brady at all. Since 06, Brady's been like this. 01 to 04, he threw to the open guy, starting with people like David Patton, but after the 05 season, something changed. You had the Jabbar Gaffney's and all. And you guys backed him. You guys backed him with Mankins. You held a funeral with Logan Mankins.
Danny, he didn't complain in 06. The line of demarcation is after the 07 season. In 06, he was given garbage, and he didn't chirp nearly as much.
He started in 06.
Not really. Not really.
Forget, the guy's been with the team 20 years. We've seen a couple of different types of personalities with Tom Brady. Okay, so this guy, he pouts all the time since 06. Not all the time. Well, 01 to 04, he was the guy that threw to the open guy because he was a rookie himself, and he was on the same level as the people around him. Now he's being a snob, and I invented TBRAC. The Tom Brady Receiver Acceptance Club. If you're in it, you get looks. If you don't, which is why I think more than 70% of the receivers that have tried to come into this team and assimilate have failed because of him. Now, the other thing, you still there?
Yes.
Okay, on the balance, Felger, I got a guy, Michael Felger, that tells me I can't have both offense and defense, that suddenly characterizes people like me who said they wanted Antonio Brown on the team because I wanted 50 to 10 games. That is absolutely ridiculous. I want balance. I want a team built to win different ways.
Okay,
like
but Danny,
in 03 and 04.
The point is you're generally going to tilt towards one or the other. Of course you try and be as good as you can on both. You don't purposely neglect and say, we're going to suck on offense to win on defense. You try and be as good as you can on both sides. But the way it works in the real world, practically speaking, the team is generally going to slant one way or the other. Give me any team in football right now, all 32 across the board, I'll tell you whether they're slanted on one side of the ball or the other. It's just the way it works, and you know it. So cut that nonsense. And Danny, trust me, in 06, it's not the line of demarcation. Not to go like I was there on you, but I was there on you. I was there. Like Brady did not have nearly this sort of complex then that he does now. I think it changed coming out of the injury, probably 08, 09, 2010, after he had the Randy Moss and Wes Welker team, where the whole team lost its way with the Randy Moss thing. But either way, look at the guys that he had trouble assimilating with. Because, by the way, in 06, by the end, he was throwing to Jabbar Gaffney.
He was.
And he was working with these bums that he had on that team.
They figured it out.
It really started after that. And really, after the injury, 07, 08, 09. And then, so what was Ocho Cinco's year? 2010, 2011. It never worked. And Joey Galloway. And that's when I can give you this parade of guys, whether it's young guys or old guys, that never fit into the circle of trust. So you're right that it used to be different. Your timeline's just a little bit off.
Yeah, to me, it was 07. Again, 07 is when it became about the quarterback. They put up the 50 touchdown passes, and they became this air show. And as you said, they became what they hate. They became the Indianapolis Colts. They became this quarterback-centric thing that was whipping all over the place, and we win with the QB. And they went 10 years without a championship. 10 years. I don't think that's a total coincidence. Now, look, they caught a couple of bad breaks in there. So I'm not, But I think they got a little too heavy on the QB.
Okay, we got you covered on everything Patriots, Giants related heading into the game tonight. We do just want to take a quick breather, real quick, for what happened last night in the baseball. You enjoy that, Murray?
Oh.
All right. And a quick Celtics thought as well, right after.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
I hate jokes. We're not taking jokes.
That joke blew.
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Kelly retired. The Nats in order in the ninth. And the Dodger fans are holding their breath. Tied at three, 10th inning. Kelly set. Kendrick swinging a fly ball to center field. Bellinger going back, way back at the wall, and it's gone. A grand slam home run for Howie Kendrick. 7-3 Nationals.
Dodgers Radio. Kelly on the mound, as in Joe Kelly. Gentlemen, discuss.
Go ahead, Murray.
Where should I start? With Joe Kelly or Kershaw? I'll give you Kelly first, because he was nails in the ninth, and it kind of annoyed me, because it was clear he had made another deal with the devil, just like he did.
He looked awesome in that inning.
Same thing. Turned into Pedro, just like he did with the Red Sox last postseason. And I wanted it so badly for it to blow up in his face, but I was like, okay, he had his ninth inning. That'll be it. But then Dave Roberts turned to Joe Kelly again in the 10th. You figured it was going to be Kenley Jansen. I figured, I'm not the biggest seam head, but I know you go to Jansen here, right? Nope. So he doubles down with Joe Kelly, and oh boy, you can take the bum off the wheel of the gutless bum, so you can't take the gutless out of the bum. I tweeted it. I needed a cigarette after that grand slam. That was, I almost had like a sexual reaction to that. That was so great. Oh, so good. Oh, oh. Oh, it was so good. Oh, I hate the Dodgers anyway. Joe Kelly is, you know, one of the premier bums on the wheel, gutless bums. Oh, it was so deserved. It was so good. Oh, I loved it. I'll wait for Clayton Kershaw, but go ahead, Mass.
I mean, the Kelly thing to me was, you know, again, how do you not love that? You're going, ah, there you go. There's the real Joe Kelly. That's the guy we're looking for. There's the real Joe Kelly. And, but as much as that story was about Kelly, how do you get into elimination game in the playoffs, a winner-take-all decisive game 5 or 7, you know what I mean. How do you get into that situation? You send a reliever out for a second inning of work. You've already blown a 3-1 lead. He then loads the bases, and you leave him in there?
Hey, Dave Roberts is made out of stone. Like, I was wondering what the hell happened.
Okay, so
how does that happen?
Is that Dave Roberts or is that analytics? Do we blame the manager there, or they are so heavily scripted by their front office and the nerds in L.A.? This is a problem when I talk about Dodgers and the calls. Is it Roberts or is it upstairs?
Well, isn't there an override? That's why you have a manager. Otherwise, don't have one. Don't have them in baseball.
Oh,
if you're just going to go by the book and the nerds, then this is stupid.
Oh, teams have done this already.
Well, yeah, I know, and they're idiots, and they deserve to lose.
Aaron Boone. I mean, I think Aaron Boone is strictly just the button pusher for the guys upstairs.
Yeah, so look.
I mean, why do you think there are so many inexperienced, you know, young, inexperienced first-year managers that step into these jobs? Because they're not making any they're just babysitting. They're there to relate to the players, and all the decisions come upstairs.
I think you've got that part of it right. That's what they want. They want the manager now to connect to the players and make everybody nice and happy and comfortable so they can all reach peak performance, which in and of itself is part of analytics, by the way. The whole thing is, because I remember Theo saying this once, you know, if you look into a guy who's underperforming, there's usually some physical or psychological element that is preventing him from getting there, which is to say he's unhappy. Aside, you know, the physical part of it we know, but you got to keep him happy. You got to, you know, the communication, all that's really important. So, but the game management, they all want to do it by Carmine. They all want to do it by Carmine. I just have a hard time in that situation. Again, you've blown a 3-1 lead. You send him out for the second inning, and it goes walk, ground rule, double. So you then intentionally walk the next guy, and you let him face Kendrick with the bases loaded, nobody out?
But, Maz, but this is what I'm telling you. What if the TrackMen showed that Joe Kelly's spin rate matched up well against Kendrick's swing path, and that's what the binder said, that we want that matchup?
Oh, reap what you sow.
Was it second and third? Was it intentional? I'm sorry.
It was an intentional walk.
Yeah. So something tells me that they kept Kelly in intentionally to pitch to Kendricks. I don't know what the split is, what Kendricks' career against Joe Kelly was, but I don't even think they're using that anymore. As we read yesterday, it's the TrackMan technology with the StatCast and swing path versus spin rate and this sort of thing. And what if that was the matchup that they wanted? Something tells me that, because anyone using common sense or any sort of hunch or any sort of just watching the flow of the game, you say it's time to get this guy out of here. But I bet you, my guess is that in the three ring binder.
No, I think you're right about that.
The nerd said, if it ever comes to Kelly Kendricks, we like that. And that's why he's in there.
Yeah, it just, again, it just dismisses so many other variables, right? And I hear you. I'm not telling you that that's not how it went down. I found that stunning that they could leave him in that camp.
Okay, and as for Kershaw, I think that that was scripted. Now, that doesn't feel analytics-driven, but maybe it is. But it feels scripted. We're going Bueller, Kershaw. And it went perfectly to script. I've seen this a million times. It is great. We got, was it 6 out of Bueller, 7 out of Bueller, whatever it was. And now we're going to go to 2 for Kershaw. And that's how we're going to, and that's what it was. And it never entered their thinking that Kershaw is a bad big game performer or a bad in big spots, because you know what nerds categorically do not believe in?
I'm glad you brought this up.
Clutch and late.
They don't believe in clutch and late. They think that clutch and late is a fallacy. They think it's a myth. They think it all averages out in the long run. And it's really, so the nerd will tell you in none of their computation, in their computations, do they factor in big spot clutch perform? They don't believe in clutch and late. It doesn't exist to them. So for them, it's like, yeah, Kershaw next, because because usually these guys have never played anything except with themselves or at their computer.
Right. Again, to them, that's what the players are. They're computer programs.
And for people who think like that, and that was my favorite thing that came out of that whole thing. Because I was about to go to bed, but in comes Clayton Kershaw. I was like, I bet I know how this ends. I'm going to stay up for this. Because for any of those people that don't believe, oh, clutch isn't real, I point you towards Clayton Kershaw, the most dominant regular season pitcher of the last decade plus, who is also a perpetual puddle in the playoffs every single postseason. 9 times he's been to the playoffs. 0 rings. Compare that to someone else who's also in his division, Madison Bumgarner, who's maybe the most nails postseason pitcher of this generation. 4 times he's been to the playoffs. 3 rings. That's the difference between a perpetual playoff puker like Kershaw and a clutch performer like Madison Bumgarner. But clutch isn't real. How do you watch that performance last night and not tell me that clutch isn't a real thing? There's no comp. I even tried, like, what's this team? This Dodgers team? I was like, well, they're the Braves of this generation. But even those losers won a World Series. This is unbelievable.
So Madison Bumgarner has a 9.0 barrel percentage, a 89.4 exit velocity, and a 17.4 launch angle. A perfect two-way player to sign this offseason.
Thank you, Carmine.
So, like, you want to talk about numbers? You want to give the Stat Geeks? You want to give the Stat Geeks numbers? Okay, here you go. Like, this is one they should punch in their effing computer when it comes to Clayton Kershaw. Just quickly. Last year, Clayton Kershaw was hurt. The years prior, he finished in the top 5 of the Cy Young voting all 7 years. He won 3 of them. He finished 2nd another time. He won an MVP. And I heard them say either on the broadcast last night or on, it might have been on Get Up this morning. I'm not sure where.
Either way.
The comment was, you could make the argument that Clayton Kershaw is the greatest pitcher of all time. Regular season. And I heard that and went, come on. Then I looked it up. Winning percentage of guys who've won 150 games. Clayton Kershaw among modern pitchers now is number 1 all time. He's number 1. And I eliminated the guys who played in the 1800s. I came up with 10 guys on the list. Okay? Kershaw, Whitey Ford, Pedro Martinez, Lefty Grove, Christy Mathis, and Halliday, Clemens, Scherzer, Koufax, Price, Guidry. Okay, that's your list. 2 guys on that list all those guys have won more than 65% of their games in the regular season. 2 of them have a losing record in the playoffs.
Price and Kershaw.
The 2 of them. Price and Kershaw. The point being, those might be the 2 biggest choking dogs of all time. 2 biggest chokers, and they left that guy in there.
Choking. He sucks and blows my...
Thank you. Choking does not go into the computer program. They don't believe in it.
That doesn't exist. So, how do you watch that last night and tell me that doesn't exist?
Okay, so there's your baseball thought. You can weigh in if you want. We'll do the Horford thing some other time. I want to weigh in on something I don't want to see tonight. I don't care to see tonight. Patriots, Giants. We'll get to your calls as well, so don't go anywhere. Long commercial-free segment next.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5. The Sport.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Something?
I don't know. Google it, Maz.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app.
That's idiotic.
Now back to Felger and Maz on Boston's home for sports.
Former teammate Rob Gronkowski was just announced that he's going to be a football analyst for one of the networks.
Nice.
What type of analyst do you think Gronk will be?
He'll be good. He'll be good. He's been pretty good at everything he's done. So he's, I didn't know that. It's good for him. It's a great opportunity.
You're on the Fox pregame show this Thursday night, actually.
So. Oh, good. Hard-hitting analysis.
Look, Brady joking around about Rob Gronkowski on the Fox broadcast tonight. This is something I don't give two poops about. Unless he's actually going to talk football and give me some insight into how they do it down there. Because that, to me, is the most interesting story involving the Patriots. Don't we all want it? Like, whenever you're asked that fantasy question, I asked you yesterday, you in a golf foursome, wouldn't you want it with Belichick to just pick his brain about how do you do it?
Well, yeah. I mean, I didn't include Belichick because I just assumed he wouldn't converse.
No, okay, no, but I mean, you know what I mean. Like, I mean, that's the question. None of the books written about it yet. All due respect to Mike Colley and all these. We have not gotten really inside on, I mean, that's just a question anyone wants to know. If Belichick has truth serum, what's really going on there? How do you really do it? And that I don't think that is really, really been written or been told. So, I'm not telling you that we're going to get it all from Rob Gronkowski, but that's what I'm constantly in search of, is that. And if Gronkowski wants to come out there and talk football and stand in front of a video screen and say to us, watch what they're doing here with the tight end and how they fake the safety into thinking we're doing this, but we do that, I will take that all day.
Sure.
So that I'm interested in. I just fear that's not what we're going to get. I get the feeling he's going to shotgun a beer, take off his shirt, and shake his ass. And I could give two craps about the character that is Gronk. I just am not interested in it. I'm not entertained by it. I'm maybe too old or not enough fun or whatever.
Or both.
It's a me problem, not a you problem. I'm just telling you, I have no use for it. I don't care. I don't need to see him shotgun a beer and then crunch the beer can across his forehead. I don't care to. And then he's going to spike something. Like,
oh, that spike's definitely coming.
Oh, he spiked something. Did you see him spike it? Hey, come in here. Rob's about to spike it. Yay, go Gronk, spike it. Ooh, yeah, Gronk. Like, I'm sorry. I have zero time for it. Zero use for it. And I have a feeling, since he's on the pregame show, which is all fluffery and fill, that's what he's going to do. I wish he was in the game broadcast. And not that I have to hear from him every snap, but if he sees something, draw something up on the telestrator and say, Rob, what did they do here? And teach me something. Learn me. And I have no use for that other stuff.
Oh, yeah, they won't do it, though. So they won't do it that way. But again, you're talking about, you know, I don't know. In some ways, I wonder if your expectations are unrealistic. It's TV. They're going to cater to the masses.
Especially Fox. You know, I just feel there's
a lot of grab ass on Fox.
Oh, they will embrace that grab assery like you read about.
I think they should do that more with some of the former Patriot guys instead of just giving me, you know, Willie McGinnis can get access to Bill Belichick, but they don't talk about anything.
Exactly.
It's a bunch of garbage. There's nothing, you know, really consequential there or significant there at all. And so the problem is that the reason they brought Gronk in is because they view him as a cartoon character. And so they're going to ask him to be a cartoon character because no one at Fox is going to have the presence to sit there and say, do you think he could actually explain a play to us?
Exactly.
But that's really what they should do.
It's all I'm interested in.
I told you, I'd put Gronk in front of a big screen. To me, the topic with Gronk in week one is, you know, you're doing a Patriots game. Look at the Patriots passing game, Gronk. Brady doesn't have chemistry with the tight ends.
Why?
Right. What are some of the issues here? Are there plays you can point at and say, yep, I know what happened here because that happened to me in my first year, and by the second year, it was gone. You know, I was much better at it.
And I think he'd be sneaky good at it. I think he'd have a little less of a filter, or he wouldn't be able to get the filter there in time. You know, he'd slip up and give you something he didn't mean to give you, but it would be good for us. And I want to see him in that spot. Give him that spot. Let him do some straight football. And let me just see how that is. If it's no good, it's no good. Fine. But at least give him the don't turn him into some, as you said, cartoon character.
Well, that's what he is. In their mind, that's what he is. And again, you know, Gronk's loved by kids. He's got that kid's crash leets, I think it is, on Nickelodeon or whatever.
Oh, God, my but that's the whole thing. That crap.
It's the appeal of Gronk. It's the life-size, like, you know, like Schwarzenegger in Twins. You know, he's kind of this lovable moose. And so they're going to play that. I think they're going to play that. That's what I'm expecting.
Of course that's what they're going
to
do.
Yeah, no. But my point is, if they were to give me the other thing.
Oh, I'd be thrilled. That'd be interesting.
I'd be pleasantly surprised.
Which is why I wanted him in the game. Because in the game, there's less chance for you to shotgun a beer and.
Yeah, he's forced to actually talk football.
Exactly. Keep your shirt on and just talk about what you just saw on the field. Right? But the pregame, he's going to be dancing with Cletus. Is that the freaking cartoon football character? Like
Frank Caliendo, they're going to bring him out. He's going to pretend to be Belichick. Belichick's going to talk to him. It's going to be nonstop bits. You're going to be so mad.
Kiss the underside of my ass. I'm not watching.
Put it on the old FC. I want to see it. The people want to see how mad you'll get.
Get ready for it. It's coming.
Okay, so that's something I don't care about. There's a lot of things in the game tonight I do care about that we hit on earlier. We can circle back to all that stuff. You're all lined up. You want to weigh in on Roberts last night? You can do that too, I promise. To your phones, 90 seconds, no commercials, just a quick update first.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.